All right, here we are. This is AP and Spence. We're two lawyers talking college sports and sports law in general. Here we are for season two, episode 10. Moving right along, eh? What do you think about that, AP?
I think 10 is great. I mean, that's how many episodes do we have in season one? Do you remember?
40 episodes in season one, you know, and now 10 in the second season so far.
25%. We're 25% of the way there, Spence. I've always been a guy of stats.
Yeah, and
I'm a data guy.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what you live your life by, and it's impressive.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's exciting. 10th episode. You know, I remember our 10th episode. Do you remember our 10th episode, our 10th ever episode?
I don't recall off the top of my head.
How far? We've come so far.
Well, yeah, 50. We've had 50 podcasts. This is our 50th anniversary special,
yeah,
right?
We
50 podcasts.
We should
that's
should
a year,
celebrate.
Spence. Yeah, we've been doing this almost a year.
That's
almost
great.
A year, yeah. And we've came a long ways, and we, you know, we have a lot of guests. We bring a lot of knowledge. Our listenership's gotten a lot larger than
that's
it was
right.
in the past.
That's right. We've got listeners all over in almost every state in the union.
Yeah.
And at least 21 different countries right now. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. And we get messages from people and I'm listening. We've had schools that are listening, colleges, different departments and things like that, which is really cool and special. And so it's a lot of fun. We just like doing it. We like bringing the knowledge. And I think we got some things on tap for today, Spence. What do you think?
That's right. Let's get right into it. So the one thing, the biggest thing that's on my mind right now is over the last week, there have been two very prominent college football players, one at Wisconsin, one at Clemson, both quarterbacks, both, you know, Trevor Lawrence at Clemson, and I'm blanking on the guy's name at Wisconsin, Mertz, I think. Two of the best players on their team, two, you know, premier elite players who are both having incredible seasons and both get diagnosed with coronavirus, right? So they're COVID positive. Now, the Big Ten has a 21-day policy where if you're diagnosed, you are 21 days out, no football, no nothing, and you're out of the program. But in the ACC, it's only a 10-day quarantine. And the coach gets to decide when the player started to exhibit the symptoms.
Yep.
So Trevor Lawrence is out this week against Boston College, and they're still going forward. But Wisconsin has canceled its game this weekend against Nebraska, right? And so it's really curious to see the different Big Ten versus ACC and how they're handling these exposures. So what do you think?
Why did they cancel the game?
They had too many outbreaks, right? So they had too many positive tests. But the most prominent is their quarterback. I guess they've had a couple other positives. And through contact tracing and stuff like that, they had to cancel the game. They didn't have enough players.
Yeah, because it makes sense if it was like, you know, 10 days from the date you test positive. If you leave it up to the coach to decide when did you have symptoms, I would feel like the coach is going to say, man, Trevor Lawrence, I feel like he had symptoms 19 days ago.
That's right.
and unbelievably, he's got 2 days of quarantine and get back out there. And we make light of it. I mean, I'm sure I know that the coaches want everybody to be safe and healthy, but you know, look at Oregon. Recently, Oregon had 5 people test positive for coronavirus. It was considered an outbreak, big problems. And then sure enough, it comes out false positives, all 5.
Right, just like Nick Saban a couple of weeks ago.
False positive.
False positive. You know, 3 days before the biggest game of the season, at the time, Alabama, Georgia, Nick Saban comes out with a positive. The next day, it's a false positive.
I mean,
one other negative, and then he was good to coach. No problem.
Yeah. Well, can you imagine if Trevor Lawrence comes out as a false positive in a couple of days? You never know. How do you determine that? Do you just start testing him again and again and again? Eventually, he's negative a couple times?
Right, with a different test or different process, different procedure. You know, a lot of these rapid tests, we don't know how accurate they are, and we don't know how many false positives there are out there. You know, you've got 6 pretty prominent situations with Oregon and Alabama where these false positives are there. I mean, you know, I'm sure Clemson isn't going to worry about Boston College, but then next week they're playing Notre Dame. Notre Dame's ranked 4th in the nation right now. This is a potential top 5 matchup.
Would that be within the 10-day time frame?
It is within the 10-day time frame. So assuming that he tested positive on Wednesday, so 10 days would be next Sunday. Right? So he would not be able to play against Notre Dame. I guarantee you he's going to play against Notre Dame.
Yeah, the coach is going to say he experienced, you know, he had a slight headache a couple days before. Start the clock then. He's cleared Friday. And there's Trevor Lawrence on Saturday against Notre Dame. And so the coaches are making scientific decisions. The ACC is making different decisions than the Big Ten. 21 days versus 10. That's it. How did they come up with these numbers?
Your guess is as good as mine, but it seemed like it was a decision that was made by the conference, by the different schools, different commissioners at the different schools, ADs, and they just said, okay, we're all gonna adhere to the same policy, you know. And what's interesting about the Wisconsin and the Big Ten thing is that Nebraska is totally healthy. Nebraska could play this weekend. They don't have any positive tests. They're ready to go. So what does Nebraska do? Nebraska reaches out to UT Chattanooga and says, hey, and you know their nickname, of course.
UT Chattanooga?
Yeah, that's right.
That's the choo-choo trains.
They're close. The Mocs. That's close.
Oh, the Mocs.
That's
okay.
Right.
Like the moccasins?
No, the Mocs, like they go at Mach speed. Like,
oh, yeah. See, that makes the Chattanooga, I think, like a train.
That makes sense.
Right? In my mind.
Absolutely. So Nebraska reaches out to UT Chattanooga and says, hey, UT Chattanooga, we want to play you guys this Saturday. And UT Chattanooga says, absolutely, let's do it. And they have a contract supposedly worth $250,000 to $300,000 that UT Chattanooga is going to receive. And the Big Ten swoops in and says, nuh-uh, you are not playing. We are only playing conference games. So, you know, it's an interesting process. How the Big Ten is looking at this process versus the ACC.
I'll tell you what's not fair, Spencer. This should not be a canceled game. It's a forfeit by the other team. Nebraska should be 1-0. The other team forfeited. If they cancel, that's kind of unfair because it's like, no, we're healthy and ready to go. Now we're 0-0 and we just have a week off, right? Instead, we should be 1-0. You're 0-1. It's not a canceling. It's like if you and I were going to meet for pickup basketball at your church.
Right, which I would dominate.
You would 100% dominate. Yeah. But then if all of a sudden you were like, oh, Aaron, man, my ankle's hurting me. We'll have to go next weekend. I'd say, no problem. I'm 1-0. This is a win because I was here ready to play you, right? Am I missing something here, Spence?
Well, I, what's really frustrating to me is, so a lot of other schools, BYU had an outbreak. The second game of the season, we were supposed to play Army. Well, what did we do? We postponed the game.
Yeah, that's different.
That's different because we've got dates at the end of the year in November and December when we could play Army. If they want to play, right? Whereas the Big Ten, because they waited so long, they've got 7 weeks to play seven games, and then it's the college playoff decision, right? And all these schools are going to want to play in the college playoffs. And Wisconsin, for example, is potentially going to have to cancel games against Michigan and Ohio State, two teams that are, you know, vying for one of those positions in the college football playoffs. And if now Ohio State, instead of playing seven games, is only going to be playing six games.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. It's going to throw a mess into things. You know, are you also going to have a situation where Michigan suddenly has a little outbreak right before playing Ohio State? Well, we better cancel that game and play all the other ones. I don't know. The whole thing just seems strange. I feel like if one team's ready to go and you're not, you get a loss, they get a win. And otherwise, you postpone the game. One or the other has to happen.
But see, the Big Ten painted themselves into this corner, in my opinion, because they waited so long to get back to playing. And I think the Pac-12 is going to be in the exact same situation. US, for example, you know, think about it. Let's say USC is slated to play Washington State, and Washington State says, you know, outbreak, we can't play. Now USC is only 5-0, you know, at the end of the year, instead of playing their sixth game. And the committee is going to say, well, you only played five games, but look at Oklahoma State that played 10 games. You know, maybe the eye test says USC is better than Oklahoma State, but do you think the committee's going to say a 5-0 team, or, you know, maybe a 6-0 team maybe is better than a 11-0, you know, Big 12 champion that played 11 games?
Yeah, and that's going to be frustrating for the team that's ready to play and can't, the Nebraskas. In that situation, the USC, this is, wait a minute. No, we're ready to play. We're healthy. We're ready to go. We work really hard. We've quarantined. We've kept our bubble together. We're ready to play. We're healthy. And you guys can't play. Why are we being hurt by
that? That's right. That's right.
You know, and so that's tough. I mean, and I'm sure Oregon fans or Oregon State fans are all going to feel the same. That's really tough. And it's a little bit of luck. Let's say Oregon meets USC in the Pac-12 championship. I think it's December 18th or 17th, right in there. and all of a sudden Oregon has a little coronavirus outbreak. And who wins the game? Is USC just canceled? Does USC become Pac-12 champions?
Yeah, because you can't postpone it.
No,
right? Because that weekend is the college football playoff announcement.
Yep.
So you can't postpone it. You gotta either play the game or move on. You know. Anyways, it's just there's just a lot going on. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, week to week, a lot of things going on, a lot of rapid testing, rescheduling. You have to try to reschedule a game right now. We're in November. I mean, it's almost November. Yeah, a lot going on, Spence. We'll see. You have to be good and talented and a little bit lucky, healthy. Wash your hands, wear a mask, 6 foot distance. Otherwise, you're going to be canceling games, Spence.
Yeah, that's right. And you're going to be, you know, but I just keep coming back to the fact Clemson is still playing because they had one positive test. Yeah, it was their probably one of their best players in Trevor Lawrence, but Wisconsin had to cancel.
Well, and that brings up the big point. That's what I'm worried about. I was making that joke with Michigan and Ohio State, but the chance of having one player on your team of 100 having coronavirus in the middle of winter is not that outrageous.
That's right.
So could you say, oh, we're going to keep playing Cleveland? Oh, we have one guy, Bill Smith, the backup kicker, he's got coronavirus. Can't play Ohio State. Dang it. You know, we would have loved to, but we can't. You know, cancellation. And then Michigan wins all their other games.
Right.
I mean, so I'm not saying, you know what I mean? Like the whole thing, what I'm trying to get at is there's not a lot of sense between 21 days, 10 days, when it starts, cancellations, postponements. And the Pac-12 has backed themselves in a corner too. They don't have any bye weeks. I don't even know if are they 21 days as well? I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the Pac-12 rules are. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what a lot of the conferences' rules are. I mean, we just know what the rules are for. We don't know what the SEC rules are for how long they have to quarantine, or if at all.
Or if false positives. We don't know a lot, Spencer. And so the problem is I don't think a lot of people know a lot.
That's right. And so then we're just kind of left in the dark. And then all of a sudden we hear, okay, well, Trevor Lawrence is out 10 days. And Mertz is out 10 days at Wisconsin, or 21 days at Wisconsin. And, you know, anyways, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, we'll buckle up. Is it you go click? You know what that is? That's my airplane seatbelt. The turbulence is hit. Spencer, I'm looking over the window. We're going over the Rockies. Things are shaking. You know, and I started thinking, I want off this plane. I'm getting scared here, man. And you're not. You're the type that you'd be sitting there, no seatbelt.
I'm totally cool.
Yeah,
you know, the oxygen mask drops down. It's all good.
It's all good.
We'll figure it all out.
I got mine on right now. This is going to get a Rocky football season up ahead, guys.
All right. Stay strapped in. Let's go. All right, here we are coming back. This is AP and Spence. We're two lawyers talking college sports and sports law in general. Now, let's do a little follow-up here. How about that, AP? Does that sound all right?
I love it.
All right, so last week we talked about an incident with the UMass athletic department where as a result of about $9,100 of impermissible benefits, most of which we understood at the time was related to overpayment of housing, and we kind of talked about what that was. We found out some additional information this week that the women's tennis team received $252 worth of overpayments of phone bills. And as a result of the $252, they had to vacate 3 years of wins, including the 2017 A-10 championship, which the women's tennis team did. That seems pretty harsh to me. Over $252. I mean, that, you know, frankly, it seems unreasonably harsh. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good reminder that the NC, how serious the NC rules are and how little small things can get you in huge trouble. You know, and you have to have the right monitoring in place, the right proactive policies and procedures, and really know what's going on. Because now, forever, that team's stripped of its title. Think about that. Imagine if you got the ring at home, you got the T-shirt, Spence. You know, if you're winning a championship, you got the T-shirt at home. You're displaying the hat at
Absolutely.
home.
Absolutely. I'd be having that ring. You know, like when you came in with your championship rings the other day.
Absolutely.
You know, from your time at USC, you were bragging a little bit.
Well, I'm rolling dirty in all of those rings, Spence. That's how, if I go to hearing, I'm putting every ring I own. You know, even every chain, even in the house. I think there's a song like that.
That's
where
right.
Every chain, even
that's
the house. Right. You know, and so I'm doing that. And this now, this women's team, they can do it, but it's got an asterisk. You might as well sell that on eBay.
They had to take down the banner.
take it down. I mean, somebody's literally, some intern's up there cracking it off. You know, their bag that says championship, you got to kind of get somebody to embroider it off or put a marker over it. All of it goes away. The record books go away. You're not a champion anymore because of $252. So what that tells me, if I'm an athletic director listening to this show, compliance and lawyers, I'm getting all those people involved. I don't want to give my coach $9 million a year in the football team. I want to give him $7 million. And if that means I don't get the best coach in the world, that's okay, because I want $2 million more to go to compliance and lawyers. And that's just the way it's going to go.
That's right. Because that's how this, that's how important this is. And again, like we talked about last week, now, well, we talked more about the rent payable, you know, and stuff like that, and how these student athletes sometimes get a little confused. And I guess I wasn't aware that schools often will pay their phones as well. Is it kind of the same process?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's ways to do that, whether it's through the Student Opportunity Fund, or, you know, if you're a certain low income individual, there's ways to get that stuff paid. But yeah, the point is, when you're doing cost of attendance, think of it like, hey, we're going to have some cost of going to school here. I'm going to have a cell phone. I'm going to have to do maybe, you know, pay a couple bills. I got to live, you know, on campus, that sort of thing. And that's what some of these rules are built into to allow for that.
Right.
Without getting to all the nuances of it, but that's the gist of it. But the problem is, if you overpay just a little bit, big consequences can happen. And so you really got to, the person that's cutting those checks has to be really on the ball. They have to be really educated. The student athletes have to be really honest, but not just honest. You know how it goes, Spencer. When you deal with a lot of different people, people need to remember to update you with their new address, the new circumstances, new things going on.
Absolutely.
It's data transfer, it's communication, it's proactiveness. It's really difficult, or things can fall off the radar and become a big problem.
That's right. And like you said, this just goes to show you how seriously schools need to take even these minute little things. I mean, $252 to UMass, who probably has a athletic budget of well over, you know, into the millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Right. But they're one of their premier programs. It sounds like their women's tennis team. That's a good program. Is having to vacate wins and lose championships over $252.
I bet you, Spence, if I went to your car right now and dug around under the seats and under things, I'd find $252 in change. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I don't know about that, but you'd find my CD collection, which I don't use anymore, that's worth at least $252. But yeah, I mean, it seems so minute. It seems so silly. Yeah. I mean, you know, how do you equate that to, you know, for example, what happened at like LSU or at Arizona with their basketball programs? You know, like how do those, you know, we're talking about millions, tens and tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars being in exchanging hands. And it seems like their punishment is not as severe as what happened to this UMass women's tennis team.
Yeah, it is strange. I mean, because yeah, it doesn't, even when you really think about the big picture, what gets the heart of amateurism in collegiate athletics? A coach buying recruits.
Right.
Not, hey, you know, Billy and Janie got $50 each for one of their bills. You know, it's like, yeah, that stinks. Maybe they need to pay it back. You slap them on the wrist. No, they got hit pretty hard. But the that can happen with some of these NCAA rules. I've seen it before. And so you got to take it real seriously. You have to have a really educated compliance office, a bigger compliance office, and you got to have lawyers involved sometimes. And you have to have administrators that have compliance experience as well. A lot of times administrators are old football coaches,
right?
Nice people, good people. They have no clue about the rules. Sometimes you want to build that your staff up with people that have legal backgrounds and compliance backgrounds and that sort of thing, to make sure the whole culture is kind of understand what's going on and you make the right hires, smart people. It's important.
That's right. Well, that you know, we'll see what ends up happening here with the UMass women's tennis team. But it seems like this is the penalty. They're just accepting it. They're moving on. Sometimes that's what you got to do. But, you know, again, once again, you just got to be careful, right?
Exactly, Spence. That's how you live your life.
Absolutely. All right. What does that sound mean, AP?
We're going to the phones.
That's right. We're going to the phones. And this going to the phones is brought to us by Welch, Bruin, and Green. We're a law firm based in Portland, Oregon. We specialize in workers' compensation, personal injury, social security disability, and what else, AP?
Collegiate sports law. We can do anything a compliance office could do, plus more. We can review coaches' contracts. We can help with an investigation. We can help you draft or rewrite policies and procedures that you have for your athletic department or compliance office. We can audit for you. Give us a call. We'll help you out.
Absolutely. What's the best way to get in contact with us?
I think phone is great, Spencer. Me 503-221-0870. Ask for Aaron or Spencer.
You can also go to our website, which is WBGATTY.com. You could email us directly at our Gmail account, which is collegesportsattorneys@gmail.com. Or you can email me at skelly@wbgatty.com. Or what else?
A Price@wbgatty.com.
Give us a call. You won't regret it. All right, here we are, AP. We're going to the phones. Who do we got on the phones today?
We have Kyle Skillman. He is a member at Bond, Schoenick & King, or BSK is how I knew them. A fantastic law firm. I think the premier law firm in the country for collegiate sports law issues. A lot of major schools and just schools in general trust them to handle complex matters, NCAA matters, and things like that. And so we're always fortunate to have Kyle come on, give us a little insight on some of the workings, and help us out with our small podcast here. Kyle, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well. Aaron, Spence, good to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too. You too. Hey, you know, we wanted to talk a little bit about this independent accountability resolution process, or IARP, as it relates to kind of NCAA infractions and that sort of thing. We've had you on before chatting a little bit about the process and different things, but you know, I think there's a few schools now that have kind of went through this process, and I was curious maybe if you could kind of just for our listeners kind of break down what is it and kind of how does it work?
Sure. I'd be happy to do that, and I think I can do that without getting into any client matters, so I'll do it from an overview perspective. But so the IARP is it's a new avenue to process an infractions case, and in particular, what they consider to be complex infractions cases. As a result of the men's basketball scandals, or the men's basketball scandal that was investigated by the federal government, and the subpoenas that came out and indictments that came out in September of 2017, you and most of your listeners probably know that the NCAA put together a commission of individuals to review current processes. And that process took place following those indictments and while those, after the disclosure of kind of the details of the federal investigation occurred. It was chaired by Condoleezza Rice. And as a result of that commission's review, there was a report issued by the Commission on College Basketball. And it proposed a series of adoption of changes to the NCAA process. Those changes in large part, were adopted by the membership in August of 2018. As part of that was the Independent Accountability Resolution Process, IARP. And those were the design and the recommendation of the commission was really to handle complex cases that kind of strike at the core of NCAA core values, I guess. It's set up so that in essence, there's an outside group, people who have no affiliation with the NCAA membership to review these cases. And there's a series of criteria that trigger that process if a member institution, the enforcement staff, or the Committee on Infractions decide to refer a case to that process. And it's often referred to as the off-ramp, which is when a case gets complex or when certain factors are present, it gets kicked over to the IARP process.
So, hey, Kyle, this is Spencer. I guess I'm curious about the IARP process. I mean, you said it can be basically the member institution, the NCAA or the committee can refer a school to the IARP or the off-ramp. Is that something that that, you know, if the school chooses to go down that route, I mean, why would a school go down that route rather than go the original or the normal way, I guess, so to speak?
Sure. Well, you're right. I want to speak to the first part first, Spence. The Committee on Infractions, the enforcement staff, or the institution can seek referral to the independent accountability resolution process. And the way they do that is a request to what's referred to as the referral committee, which is a group of individuals who refer or who evaluate the request, and then we'll kick it over into that process if they agree that it meets a series of factors. You know, for an institution to seek out that process, you know, it's really because they feel like they're not going to get a fair shake from the Committee on Infractions, and they'd like a group of individuals who don't have any affiliation with member institutions to review that case, because they feel like the NCAA process, the traditional infractions process, isn't going to be fair in the end. Mm. So that's why, if an institution were to seek referral, that's why they would go that route. Mm.
So who makes up the committee of on an if you refer it to the IARP? Is that, you say it's people who are outside of the normal NCAA infractions, right? Which can be commissioners, ADs, you know, those types of people, and people within the NCAA, you know, organization. So who could be appointed to an IARP committee? Is it like just random attorneys, random retired judges? Is it like an arbitration?
Yeah, good question. So the referral committee, that's the first step, right? So the group that would review the referral petition by the committee, an institution, or the enforcement staff. And that's actually made up of a 5-member panel who reviews those requests. There's one member from each of the appeals committee, the Division I Committee on Infractions, the independent resolution panel, and then 2 members from the Division I Council. If that referral committee agrees to refer the case to the IRP, the Independent Resolution Panel, the composition of that panel is primarily lawyers, arbitrators, individuals with experience in other sports litigation. I believe there are 2 members with prior experience in athletics administration at an NCAA institution, but they are not current staff members, which is the distinction between that panel and the Committee on Infractions.
So how large is the panel then at the IARP? Is it, do you select like, you know, like in Oregon, we can have a 3-member arbitration panel where both sides gets to pick one arbiter, and then the parties agree on a neutral arbiter. Is it a 3-panel, 5-panel? How many members are on the IARP panel?
Yeah, good question. So the panel itself is comprised of 15 members, and then of those 15 members for each case, I believe there are 5 selected to hear a case. Yes. So those are, I don't know if it's randomly selected or not, like the Committee on Infractions, but I would imagine it's based on availability and caseload, like anything else.
Yeah, and Kyle, this is Aaron. I was just going to ask that, is it, to narrow it from 15 to 5, you know, who makes that determination, you know?
Yeah, the NCAA staff internal to the NCAA has several individuals who kind of manage the IARP process, right, the IARP. And those are NCAA staff members who basically act as administrators or liaisons between all the parties that are involved. You know, Naima Stevenson at the NCAA, formerly in the council's office there, is administrator of all of the various hearing processes. So she oversees the IARP, the Committee on Infractions, and the appeals committee across all divisions. So committee, appeals committee in all divisions, and the IRP at Division I level. And then there's a staff within the NCAA that manages caseload.
Okay, all right. Well, that helps a lot, kind of map out sort of this whole process and kind of the workings of it. I'm curious if you're hearing of any, you know, opinions on pros and cons to this IARP process, both, I guess, from the general public or an institution itself.
Sure. Well, I can tell you that the once procedurally first, once the case gets referred to the IARP, a couple of things happen. That the first of that those is that there is a complex case unit assigned to be a part of the case, and that's a two-part group. And it is an investigator or an investigative group, so an outside group from the NCAA that has the opportunity to investigate additional matters related to the case, and then an advocate group that, again, outside group who would present the case to the IARP on behalf of the NCAA. So as now that you've folded in two additional groups of outside lawyers or investigators, you can imagine one of the cons to the process is that the case processing can take a lot longer. It can actually be investigated. New notice of allegations can be issued with new charges. So it can really expand the scope of a case once you get into the IARP process. That's a con. In addition to the downside of that, there's no appeal process through the IARP. So, you know, that most institutions will see that as a con as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. Two great points. So it's taking a little longer potentially, and it's the decision is final. So if you disagree with it or think something was missed, you got to live with that result, it sounds like.
That's correct.
And one of the things we're hearing about the IARP process is that it's a little bit more private, that it's not as that a lot of the investigation decisions aren't made public, you know, unless the member institution does something like that. Is that accurate, or it seems like it's not as open? Is that seems like maybe a pro for the institution, right?
Well, there are a couple things. I keep pausing because there's a lot of feedback on this stuff, but the entire infractions program is designed to be confidential throughout the course of an investigation. That's no different once a case is kicked to the IARP. So the general public's knowledge about things really not going to change under either process. The one distinction from the IARP is that there's a public acknowledgement by the IARP which cases they are handling. That's a little bit different than if the case stays in the traditional infractions process. You know, the IARP will actually acknowledge that it's accepted the case into that process and now it's being processed. But if there's additional investigation happening in those cases, or where, you know, what the timeline is in those cases, that's still not going to be public knowledge. So that really doesn't operate as a pro or a con for an institution.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, I was going to say the IARP has acknowledged that it's accepted four cases in the process. So, I mean, those are out there in Memphis, NC State, Kansas, and LSU. But there's no additional detail that they're releasing about those cases at this point.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow, that's you know, I wonder if you've heard any feedback from schools, you know, generally, it's kind of new. I mean, it's new. There's probably not a lot of feedback, but any feedback that you've heard or other people have heard about whether schools generally like this process or not?
I think it's pretty early in process to know. Certainly since IAP hasn't made a decision yet in any case, nobody really knows how it's going to turn out.
Yeah. It's just one of those things we'll have to just kind of wait and see, and people, and maybe there's tweaks to the process if it doesn't meet all everyone's expectations at some point. But, you know, I think there's probably, you know, good and bad things that can come from it, but you're getting a lot of eyeballs on it. I'm not sure that I that I love the idea of no chance to appeal, but there is finality, I guess, especially if it's been going on for a long time and moving forward personally. You know, Spence, what do you think? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, I mean, it seems like it's definitely an alternative way to go. The finality does would scare me a little bit, because I always like to appeal everything, but but I guess, you know, you just got to come prepared, right, Kyle? I mean, you just have to really know what you're arguing, what you're going to be asking for the committee to decide, and then you just kind of hope that the committee sides with the institution, right?
Yeah, and, you know, if you're the institution seeking referral to the AARP, you've really got to believe you're not getting a fair shake from the Committee on Infraction, and, you know, for whatever that reason may be. You know, the Committee on Infractions have been referring several of these cases because of, you know, so without the, you know, even in cases where the institution want the case to be referred, based on some of the factors that are in the legislation, you know, they can be sees these cases as either just that the institutions aren't accepting, you know, some of the core principles of governing themselves, or adversarial posturing, or refusing to cooperate, or that these cases just involved increased stakes. You know, you've got, these are high profile institutions, high profile coaches, and high profile issues. And the committee had said, that's exactly what this process was designed for. We'd like to see this case over there.
Yeah, you know, it makes sense to me, Kyle, to be honest. And you did a masterful job of kind of explaining this. And I kind of drew some notes here as you were, and drew a little map on how it all kind of goes together. It's kind of a flow chart. And, you know, it makes sense to me, you know, where a school may not always want to refer this, but they might feel like for some reason they're not going to get a fair shake. I was trying to think in my mind, what would that be? Why would they think that? But I'm sure that, you know, individually they might have some reason, but I would imagine, yeah, that the committee itself referring to this group would be helpful for complex, meaning serious, there's high stakes, it's newsworthy, you know, things like that. Let's get it to this entity and then it's going to be final. And this is serious. And this goes to the heart of amateurism or whatever it is. And so I think it's a good thing. You know, and there's avenues in law that kind of work the same way. And so, well, you know, Kyle, first of all, I appreciate your time on this Friday. I know it's late where you are and you got to get back to work and other obligations. And we really appreciate your time jumping on our podcast and kind of going over some of these complexities of the IARP and how the NCA takes from, you know, some notice of an infraction or, hey, you know, you've had an issue to how do you resolve it, you know? And sometimes I think the public gets bits and pieces of information from the news and ESPN and different things, but they don't understand exactly how it all flows and how to get there. So we know you and your office do a fantastic job helping all these schools out, and just appreciate your time, Kyle. And we wish you all the best, man.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And, you know, if I've confused you or any of your listeners, you can blame the rules.
Yeah, right. No, I think you did a great job. Yeah. I understand it, and I'm somebody, if I can understand it, I feel like most people can.
That's,
right?
That's true. That's true. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Kyle. Have a great day.
Take it easy.
You too. Thanks, guys.
All right. You know, I always say, we said this many times, but it's so great to have friends of the show like Kyle Skillman when they can come back on, we can reconnect with them, and then they provide us with just incredible knowledge. I mean, that was an incredible conversation to understand how this new process, this is a brand new process, this is just a couple years old, how that process is put into use.
Yeah, Kyle Skillman, one of the members of Bond, Schoenick and King. I think I'm pronouncing that right, but I always call them BSK.
That's right.
Law firm. And they're one of the premier law firms in the country, if not the premier. I say this all the time, but they are, you know, and they have attorneys that represent colleges on major issues, you know, major infraction cases, big problems. And Kyle Skillman and his team do a fantastic job. I'm really impressed by them. And that's why we're really lucky to have them on the show. to give us insight into the things like IARP. I love the all the acronyms NCAA, IARP, Independent Accountability Resolution Panel. Is that what it is?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like IARP.
So what? First of all, I guess before we get into your picks, because your picks have been on fire. Okay, recently, we're hopefully going to continue that that streak. But I guess what did you think about the process, the IARP? I mean, both you and I kind of our ears perked up when he said that decision is final, that there's no further appeal. But other than that, it seems like it could be a pretty good option for institutions that think, hey, we're going to get dinged by the NCAA if we go that route, right? If we go the normal route, the NCAA infraction committee. So maybe the AARP is an alternative route.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they feel like, hey, the school says we're not going to get a fair shake with the normal traditional route with the infractions committee. We're just not going to get it for whatever reason that might be. So we want to kind of roll the dice and petition to have this go to the IARP, and it gets sort of there's the complex case unit, two part. I mean, you got an investigative group, an outside group that come in, but you got to know when you petition for that to go to the IARP, Independent Accountability Resolution Process. It's going to take longer because there's more people involved, right? And you have no appeal right from that decision. So even if you think, no way, they came out, said we're at fault and we have all these problems, you cannot appeal it. So you got to know that if you do go the normal route, there's some different things, but it sounds like the committee could also refer things and often do.
Yeah. And they could bring up, and in their investigation, they could find new allegations and send new allegations, which could further delay the process. But, again, a lot of times when you're on the defensive side, when you're representing the institution, right, some delay can sometimes mean a good thing, right? I mean, assuming that Kansas gets dinged pretty heavily for their involvement in the Adidas scandal, they could get like in Oklahoma State where it's a one-year postseason ban. And it's a lot better to do that 2-3 years from now versus right now when you've got, some incredible recruits, right?
Absolutely. I mean, USC did a little bit of that as well, where they pushed it and appealed it. And schools might think, hey, we have the best team in the country and we have a great coach and we're right. We don't want to harm our chances right now of making the big game, and so we want to basically kick this a couple of years down the road. So that can be a benefit. So having it take a long time can be a benefit. It can also be a negative because then you have a dark cloud hanging over your program. If recruits start hearing about it, people can negatively recruit against you and say, oh, well, those guys are going through that major. Those guys are going through that big process. Do you want to be part of that? Do you want your kid in the middle of some big scandal, or do you want to come here where we're fresh, right? And so that dark cloud can hang over you. So that's a problem. But also there's a benefit of extending it, as well. And so that's something to kind of consider and think about. But it was kind of cool for Kyle to sort of talk about it. And, the people that make up the IARP, lawyers, arbitrators, experts in sports litigation, nobody that's currently on staff at a school.
That's right.
But these are the people that are deciding the fates of major schools. It could be LSU. It could be, didn't he say NC State?
NC State. He said Kansas is there. So, we're talking about, some pretty heavy, and a lot of the Adidas scandal is going that route, right? Because
it's complex.
It's very complex. It's a lot of moving parts, a lot of moving pieces. And so it would be really interesting to be a fly on the wall in one of those hearings, I think, to just kind of watch that process and see how it plays out.
Yeah, like I said, it's complex and it goes to the heart of amateurism. This is so serious to the committee. We're setting it down this road.
Right.
We're going to the IARP, the off-ramp. You're taking the off-ramp, buddy. Let's go. And there you go. You go take it and see how it goes. So, yeah, I thought Kyle Skillman with BSK did a great job of kind of breaking it down and how it all works, and their firm knows what's going on. And they help out a lot of schools, which is great. So it's good to know.
All right. Well, you ready to do your picks, AP?
Yeah, I think – what is my record right now?
So right now you are an incredible 29-3.
Now, listeners probably think, well, you're getting the answers beforehand or you're getting – no, I'm not. No, I'm really
– this is Friday evening. I'm giving him the games at – live right now.
Yeah.
And he makes the decision. I don't give him any information. And he was 4-0 last week, 29-3 overall.
I've picked an upset at least every week.
That's right.
So I'm not just taking the easy road. So 29-3, Spence. Let's keep it going.
All right. So we're gonna start in the Big 12. So the first game is Texas at Oklahoma State. Now Oklahoma State's number 6 in the nation. Texas is 3-2. They've had a bit of a struggle, but they were a top 20 program at the beginning of the year, Oklahoma State's only a 3-point favorite. This is at Oklahoma State. Who do you got in that game?
Texas.
Texas. Oh, doggy.
Yeah, Texas is going to get it done. They've been looking awful. Herman's feeling a lot of heat, a lot of pressure. They haven't done well. They're better than their 3-2 record. They're not that much better. It might be a dogfight for a while, but they're going to find a way to pull it out and beat Oklahoma State.
All right. All right. Go Longhorns, I guess. All right. Next game is going to be a tough one for you because these are two lesser-known schools. We've got Coastal Carolina versus Georgia State. First of all, I know you know their nicknames of both the schools.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Coastal Carolina.
Jaguars.
The Chanticleers.
Chanticleers,
yeah, and
of course.
Then Georgia State.
Georgia State is going to probably be the – I think it's never like something military. It's always an animal of sorts down there. In the South, South loves animals naming. But it's not Bulldogs.
No.
It's going to be more like – probably chocolate Labradors.
They're not the chocolate Labradors. They're the Panthers.
Oh.
You were close, I guess.
Okay.
Animals both have four legs.
Yeah.
So we've got Coastal Carolina, number 20 in the nation, at Georgia State. Coastal Carolina is 3.5-point favorites.
Coastal Carolina.
Okay.
They're going to win it. That's a good team.
Yeah. I don't like their field. Have you seen their field? It's kind of a teal field.
Oh, they do a teal field? Yeah. There's a blue field. There's a red field.
There's a red field at Eastern Washington.
And there's a teal field.
There's a teal field.
Any other colored fields out
Not
there?
Not that I know of, but all three I don't like, really.
You know what I wish the Oregon Ducks would do? You know how their court has those trees and it looks like you're looking down on a forest?
Yeah.
How about that? Have a tree field. Now, if you see that happen next year, Spencer, you heard it right here. I get the royalties.
You're going to trademark that, right?
Yeah.
All right. All right, so now the next game we're going to do, let's go with the – oh, this is – this we're going to go – let's go Big Ten. Okay, Ohio State, number 3 in the nation, at Penn State, number 18, just had a tough loss in overtime to Indiana. Ohio State's a 10.5-point favorite. This is the marquee game Saturday. Ohio State, Penn State, who do you got?
Penn State. I'm just kidding. No, Ohio State's going to win this. I think they're going to win pretty easy. I don't think Penn State's that good, to be honest. Ohio State is good. They're not amazing, but they're good. I think they're going to win by like 14, 17, something like that, and kind of put them away. I don't think Penn State is there this year. They're going to start off 0-2. Then they're going to start winning a few, but they're going to have kind of a mediocre year. I think Ohio State's not going to lose this year.
Ohio State? Okay, so you think they're going to cover there. All right, last game. Here we go. We're going to go to Conference USA. We've got 3-3 Navy versus 5-1 SMU. This is at SMU, and SMU is 12.5-point favorites. Navy was pretty good last year. They've struggled this year so far. Who do you got in that game?
SMU. I think SMU is still a good team. I know they struggled a little bit the last game, but they are going to beat Navy. Simple as that. So you got SMU. They're kind of back. The Pony Express is sort of back. It's like one of those small ponies that you've seen in Mexico on the beach.
Yeah.
You know those little ones?
Yeah.
It's like that, but they're still trotting along and they're doing fine.
All right. Well, we'll see how you do. We'll see. I gave you kind of harder picks this week, some closer games. So we'll see. Hopefully you go 4-0. And I mean, if you're 33-3 at that point, they got to start building you a statue. That's what I think.
Well, they got to finish the statue that they're already building.
Oh, I got you. BYU's got Western Kentucky, the Hilltoppers. And so we'll see how that goes. We're 30.5-point favorites right now.
I want you to predict from now on every week the BYU game. Who wins in the score?
I think BYU is going to win the game. I'm a little bit concerned that I don't think we're going to cover. I think we win by 27 points. I think the final score is going to be something like 52 to 20 or something like that, somewhere in that range. I guess that would cover, actually. So if we're going to say – they're not going to score 20 points. Let's see. I'm going to say we're going to – it's going to be 45 to 20. That's final guess.
All right. Hey, look, Tyson Helton, I hope he's listening. I know Joseph Wood, who can get the message to Clay to Tyson, who's the coach there.
Okay.
You got a BYU alum – guaranteeing they're going to trounce you. So hopefully they rise up and they bring the fight, but you've guaranteed a blowout for BYU, which is fair.
Are you picking the Hilltoppers here?
Oh. Mm. I'm telling you.
Straight up win?
No. Okay. I'm not. My prediction for BYU, there's something weird's going to happen this week.
Okay.
They're going to have a weird week. It's going to be, I would say, 28 to 20.
We win 28-20.
Yeah, I think it's going to get a little spooky, but they're going to find a way to win it.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one. That's not officially one of your picks, but it's kind of a friendly wager in that.
Yeah, absolutely friendly wager for Halloween.
All right, let's do it. Well, we hope everybody has a great weekend. What are you going to be for Halloween this year, AP?
Yeah, so, well, I know I'll talk first. My daughters are going to be a pumpkin and Elsa.
Okay.
And, you know, going to decorate a couple pumpkins and eat some candy. I'm going to mostly eat the candy as per usual.
Yeah.
You know, and then I have a hockey mask in the garage. And the girls think it's funny. They're not scared of it. And so I'm putting that thing on. And I'm going to wear it all day.
Okay.
And probably even if I just go to the gas station.
Smart.
Or whatever. And then people will just think, well, it's Halloween. You're, of course you're going to wear a hockey mask around in town.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, but not even be like trick or treating, not even be weird about it. I'll just wear it, you know, and because that's how I live my life on Halloween.
That's good. Good for you.
And how about you? What will you be, Spence?
Well, so I'll start with my kids. So I've got, you know, three kids. I've got my little girl who just turned 7. She's going to be a witch. And then my 11, almost 12 year old is going to be a Harry Potter.
Okay.
He's got a great costume that was made by his mother-in-law, or by my mother-in-law, his grandma. And then my 13, almost 14 year old is going to be a basketball hoop, you know. So, but this is the last year for him where he's trick or treating. I'm going to be a BYU fan because BYU plays Halloween night. And so I'm going to be wearing my jersey and my shorts and my socks. And I'm going to walk, you know, we're going to walk around the neighborhood to the extent people are handing out candy. And, you know, I'm going to be a BYU fan, something my Utah friends would find really scary.
Very scary, you know. And honestly, yeah, when I think about trick-or-treating, I know they've kind of said, hey, very unsafe, don't do it. Everyone's wearing a mask, right?
Right.
You're outside.
Right.
You're social distance.
Right.
Candy's wrapped. Nobody's licking the candy and putting it in your thing. You know.
Hopefully not.
You know, and they're not tricking you. I'm not going to certify anything safe or not, but it seems to me on the outside safer than other things that people do during COVID, right? Go to Walmart, go to Fred Meyer. I don't know. We're going to take our girls out, do a little trick or treating, and it is what it is, Spence.
All right. Well, we hope everyone has a happy Halloween, and November is right around the corner, only 2 months left in this year. I'm ready to be done with 2020.
Yeah, exactly right. Because COVID's birthday is coming up, Spencer.
Jeez.
It's about to be COVID 21.
COVID 2021. Let's
COVID can drink now.
Let's hope that doesn't happen. All right, everybody, stay safe out there.
See ya.